Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Well, we're continuing in Proverbs. Today we're going to begin the section of the Proverbs, the men of Hezekiah, if you'll look at chapter 25, verses 1. And we're going to be going through several chapters now, through chapter 28, I believe, or 29. And another series, another emphases, another major group of wisdom teachers are going to give you their approach to life. This is a very practical section, and as the others have been, and I hope that you'll think about how this applies to you and your life, the way you live daily, your priority structure. Let's begin with chapter 25, verses 6 and 7. This is basically another attitude. This section is going to be emphasizing relationships between people. Do not claim honor in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of great men. For it is better that it be said to you, come up here, than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince. Now, the last little phrase, whom your eyes has seen, the Vulgate and the Septuagint put that last little phrase of verse 7 with verse 8, and that's probably where it ought to be. You realize that the verse and chapter divisions of your Bible are not inspired at all. They were not put in until the Middle Ages, really the Reformation time, and so they're not inspired. Really, they cause major problems many times. They're just meant to help us find the place, and that's all. Now, this attitude is so key, not just this particular one, but our attitude in general toward religious things, and especially, listen to me, especially toward people. You see, people really are the priority, not even ritual, not even buildings, be it a church building or a program, no matter how good it is. The biblical priority is people and the way we work with them and love them and forgive them. And we are to emulate these interpersonal relationships that are explicated in the Bible for us. Now, this one is humility or the lack of pride. Jesus took this verbatim as an example in Luke 14, 7 through 11. I think it can almost be said that many or most of the religious truths of the New Testament have incipient form in the Old Testament. It has amazed me as I look through my New American Standard Reference Bible, the number of New Testament parallels in the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Just look sometime at the number of New Testament places that New Testament authors have used them and amplified them and applied them. Now, the next section is chapter 25, verses 16 and 17. And the basic thrust here is moderation, the golden mean, somewhere between the two extremes. I have found in Christian truth that there are usually two extremes to every statement or every truth. You can go two directions, totally one way or totally in excess. Doing too little or doing too much is probably a danger in every area of life. Now, verse 16. You have found honey. Eat only what you need, lest you have it in excess and vomit it. Terrific, huh? I don't know about your life, but when I find something I really like, usually I eat it so much that I get tired of it. Isn't that a tragedy? But that's true of every area of life. You know, God has given us goodness and abundance. And what we usually do is take that goodness and abundance, either do it too much or don't do it at all. Friends, honey's good, but you know your children eat too much candy, how sick they get. It is a sign of fallen man that we can take the good things from God, the good things of our physical world and our physical bodies, and we can overdo them to the point which that which God gave for good becomes evil and destructive. It's not the thing that's bad. Let me give you an example if I could. Heroin. There is nothing inherently evil in heroin. If you're a soldier and you've been wounded, you thank God for heroin. If you're a cancer patient that's terminal and suffering, you thank God for heroin. Now, heroin that consumes a life on the back alley of a city and makes that life do anything that has to get that drug, that's destructive. But the problem's not in heroin. The problem is in man's evil use of heroin. There's no problem in honey, but man's evil use of honey can make you throw up. Now, that truth can be applied to everything in life. There is nothing that is evil in and of itself. It becomes evil in sinful man's use of it. And there's two uses: too little, too much. Now, that is a very important truth. I hope you'll apply it to areas of your life. Sometimes I'm reluctant to apply these things too hard. I think when it gets too close, we tend to cut it off because it gets too sensitive. Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. This is moderation again. What it's saying is, visit your neighbor, have a good time with them, but don't be found over at your neighbor's house too much. He's going to get tired of you. So that which is true in the physical realm of honey is also true in the realm of personal relationships. You know, it's been my unfortunate experience that there are many people in the Church of Jesus Christ who get so involved in the church, they try to do so many things, they get totally burnt out and quit everything. It is a real sign of a mature Christian to say, no, I'm sorry, I just can't do that. I think it's a great thing and a great ideal and someone needs to do it, but I just can't do it. Even in interpersonal relationships, there is too much. There is too much. I've even known married couples who try to work together and live together. That usually causes a problem. Don't be caught in your neighbor's house too much. He'll get tired of you. That's true of everything that we do. Now, let's get down to 21:22. Again, it's another phrase used quite often in the New Testament. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. Now, this is not the motivation of the New Testament, but it is a very wise statement about how to treat enemies. It is also bringing in that our treatment of others, our interpersonal relationships with others, if they are appropriate, the Lord will bless us. Now, where is this in the New Testament? I hope you do have a reference Bible. You need one bad. Matthew 5:44, Romans 12:20. And so I hope you'll read those New Testament passages. It's very important we see the twin context of these wisdom truths. The book of Proverbs without the New Testament is not fully Christian. It's inspired, but it's not fully Christian. We have to take the book of Proverbs in its context, understand what the author is saying, and then supplement that truth with further revelation from the New Testament. Combining the two, we'll get the universal truth of God for every age. But we must take both contexts, the historical and the fullness of the Bible. Now, this is saying that a way to deal with enemies is to treat them with kindness. Do not repay evil for evil. Do not, you react with fire, you'll get fire back. Now, that's just true in every area of life. If you apply it to speech, Proverbs would say, a soft answer turns away wrath. If you apply it to every other area, it has an application. How do you deal with those who get on your nerves? How do you deal with those who have different personality types? How do you deal with that situation at work that you're caught in? How do you deal with that spouse that you have problems with? How do you deal with that child whose personality clashes with yours? This is a word of wisdom from God for all interpersonal relationships. Kindness, gentleness, self-control, patience, long-suffering will win relationships. The other spirit will destroy them, will build walls instead of bridges. Now, verse 28, chapter 25. Like a city that is broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. This is the emphasis on the control of who you are, both physically and emotionally. Self-control is listed as one of the fruits of the spirits in Galatians 5:23. It's also listed in the series of character developments that Paul uses so often. A man who can control himself is a man who has a measure of maturity. In James chapter 3, verse 1, it's used of controlling the tongue. Here, it's used of controlling his spirit, probably anger or his emotions. We need to control those things which God has given us to use. Our body is a wonderful tool. It is a wonderful mechanism. It can glorify God or it can curse God. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil. As we yield ourselves to the Holy Spirit, the Spirit will develop in us a control over our mind, over our emotions, and over our body. We need to exercise that control. It is important that self-control be a part of the areas that we can give to God. Now let's go to chapter 26, looking at verse 17. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. Now remember here, we're talking about not the little pet poodle that runs around your house with painted toenails. We're talking about the street mongrel of the Middle East. They didn't have pet dogs. They just had street mongrels to kind of clean the garbage up. Now, this grabbing a dog by the ears is a way to keep it from biting you, but it's messing with him, okay? Now, the Septuagint has grab a dog by his tail. Now, we have a cultural metaphor, a tiger by the tail. Well, if you grab a tiger by the tail and you hang on, he can't bite you. But, friends, it gets pretty tough to hang on to a tiger's tail. What this is saying is, if you're not directly involved in a dissension or a problem, if you're not part of the answer, keep your nose out of it. You know, why go messing in other people's problems if God hadn't put you there to help solve that problem? Why stick your nose in where God didn't tell you to just because you're curious? Don't grab a dog by his ears. He's going to bite you. You know, it amazes me as a counselor. Sometimes you get involved in marital strife and try to bring parties together. Lo and behold, the vast majority of the time, those who try to help get caught right in the middle, you know. Sometimes God puts us there. If God puts us there to help solve the problem or to pray about the problem, then it's appropriate that we be there. But all too often, too many people just want to know about what's happening and give their 2 cents. Save your 2 cents, and you won't get bit so often. Now, verse 21. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. I hope you'll look at 29, 22 through 23. Be careful of a troublemaker. You know, this whole context really is about a person with a bad attitude. And basically it's a man who, or a person who brings up problems, meddles in people's affairs, brings up strife. And you'll know who those are. When you find a person like that, you need to love them in Christ, but you need to leave them alone because they're going to cause problems wherever they go. They're going to cause strife. And that's what it's saying. Contentious people are going to cause strife. Now, we can pray for them, and we can, you know, be friends with them, but don't make them part of your peer group, part of your inner circle of friends, or it's going to destroy your inner circle of friends. I don't know how many of you have felt that kind of spirit in churches. It's certainly there. Now, let's go then to chapter 27, verses 1 and 2. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what today might bring forth. Now, this another is a perfect example, again, of another New Testament passage being influenced by Old Testament wisdom literature. And what is this? Well, primarily it's the book of James, chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. But also Luke, chapter 12, verses 19 and 20. Now, what is it saying here? Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what today may bring forth. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. Now, these are not directly connected. The first one is saying, let the problems of the day be enough today. It's also saying, don't plan on tomorrow. That's why James uses it. Friends, in dealing with Christian people in times of stress and problems, I have found over and over that so many people are dominated by the past, are dominated by the future. That's a tragedy. We cannot affect the past. We do not have the promise of the future. All we have is right now. Don't build all your plans for next week, 5 years, when I get there. Friends, you don't have tomorrow. You don't have the next heartbeat. You just have right now. Don't let the past be a ball and chain to you. If you've done some things that are inappropriate, give them to God and let them go. You can't affect the past. You can cry over it. You can weep over it. But you can't change it. Give it to God and leave it alone. Paul would put it this way, leaving the things that are behind, I press on to the mark of the high calling. All you have is the moment. Use the moment for God. Don't worry about what you've done in the past. Don't worry about what you're going to do in the future. Live the existential moment for God right now. Now, the second part, I think, is very important, where it says, let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. This is at the end of emphasis on pride. There have been so many words about pride. I think pride is probably the chief sin of the Christian. What we do without thinking about it, there comes a subtle temptation to say, hey, fella, you really are something, aren't you? You're really doing good. We forget that most of the goodness in our life is a gift from God. Do not be prideful about who you are. If there is something in your life that's worth emulating and extolling, you let someone else do it, don't you do it. You let someone else bring it up, don't you bring it up. Humility is a rare flower, but such an important flower. Now, let's continue then. We're going to go over to chapter 28 in verse 6. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. Now this, you might want to see chapter 19, verse 1. That first phrase is there. Now this is a very startling statement. But you will not see that unless you see the context of Proverbs. In Proverbs, poverty is a sign of wickedness. Poverty is a sign of the fool. Poverty is a sign of the sluggard. So where poverty is used as a synonym for the unrighteous, to say that a man who has integrity, though poor, is better off than a man who has wealth, is a very strong cultural, contextual statement about the priority of integrity, the priority of genuineness, the priority of a good motive. You see, it's better to be poor and even to be categorized with the sinners if your heart is right. Isn't that what Job's all about? Now, let me say to you that it says, he who is crooked. Now, the words in Hebrew for sin are words that mean missing the mark or deviation from a standard. And the reason for that is the word for righteousness or just is a word that means a straight edge. It's a word that means a measuring reed. And the measuring reed is not your fellow Christian, but God himself. Be ye holy as your Father in heaven is holy. That's an impossible standard, but that's the standard of judgment. So if you're going to be right with God, you've got to be holy as he's holy. That's why all of us have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So all the Hebrew words for sin mean crooked or missing the mark or falling short. So that's what the word crooked is here. The word righteous would mean on target, on line, straight. Now, let's look at verse 8. He who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor. Now, two thoughts here. First of all, interest and usury may be different terms, but I think they're synonymous here. And basically, we need to go back to the Old Testament where it talks about it. There's three places in the Pentateuch, the law of Moses. Exodus 22:25, Leviticus 25:35-37, and then Deuteronomy 23:19-20. Now, Deuteronomy is the focal passage, I think, for this reason. The Jews were allowed to charge interest and usury when they loaned money to foreigners, non-Israelites. But when they loaned money to their brothers, they were not allowed. Now, we need to look at this in context. I know many people apply this to the modern world and say we should never borrow or never, you know, loan. I do not think that's what this is saying. We must be very careful to interpret the Bible first in its own cultural context, and then when we know the central truth, apply it to our cultural context. It is very unfortunate to apply 2000 BC ethics to 2000 AD. Now, there are universal truths here, yes, but the specific examples recorded in the Bible are not meant to be applied in a different culture necessarily. They're meant to be interpreted in their own culture, find the principle that's involved, and apply the universal principle. Now, I don't think that borrowing money is necessarily a sin. It can be a sin if it's abused and misused and traps you in a financial problem. Then it's really a sin. But see, it's not usury that's the sin. It's man's misuse of usury. What this is saying is that we ought to have a loving, careful concern for our fellow Christian brothers. There ought to be a helpfulness, an outgoing spirit, that if we see Christians in need, we need to help them without saying, now, what am I going to get out of it? What am I going to get back? We need to help without a view to our self-interest, especially to Christian brothers. It's not so much a verse on the capitalistic economic system as it is a verse on the interpersonal relationships between the people of God. That's very important. We see that. Now, this says that God is going to take the wealth, the ill-gotten wealth, the rich, and give it to those who have been helpful to the poor. Now, that's also a New Testament truth. I think you'll look at 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 for the definitive passage on New Testament stewardship. And what it says is, God will provide seed to the sower who is using the produce of what he sows for God. It does not mean that the godly sower will get more for himself. It does not mean he'll improve his lifestyle. It means the one who shares with God, God will give him more to share with others. Now, that's what it's talking about, and that's what it means here. This is also the repeated emphasis of the book of Proverbs on the need to share with the poor. Now, remember, there's a twin doctrine here. Sometimes the poor is there because of his wickedness and his slothfulness and his inappropriate behavior. But even if he's there for that, now he may be there because he's had integrity, so we can't tell. So the Bible says, help the poor. Respond to them in love. Make it a priority to do something for them. And that's very important. We hear that. There's so many New Testament passages like that. Now, verse 22. A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know that want will come upon him. This is the emphasis on greed. The evil eye means a greedy eye, longing for things. It has always amazed me that the spirit of greed in someone is even there in the presence of abundance. You know, someone can have all the things they need for life, all the luxuries, but if they have a greedy heart, they're never going to be satisfied. There are people that have millions of dollars that are still consumed with making more money. They're going to die and have all of that abundance and never found joy. Be careful of greed. The opposite of greed is contentment in whatever situation we find ourselves. Philippians chapter 1. I hope you'll read that. If we can find contentment in little or in much, we're going to have a joy and a peace that permeates life. If this spirit of greed gets a hold of you, you will never find happiness, even in the presence of great wealth and abundance. And then finally, verse 27. He who gives to the poor will never want. He who shuts his eyes will have many curses. I hope you'll look at chapter 11 of Proverbs, verses 24 through 26. It is important for believers that we share, with those in need. I've really enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.